Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Ken Venner to the broadcast. Since January of 2012, Ken has been the CIO of Space Exploration Technologies Corporation, better known as SpaceX, a company that designs, manufactures, and launches advanced rockets and spacecraft. Ken manages the IT department to deliver cost-effective, high-performance, always-on IT tools and associated business processes that enable the business to achieve its stated goal to propel man to a multi-planet species. Prior to this time at SpaceX, Ken was the Executive Vice President of Corporate Services and Chief Information Officer of Broadcom Corporation, a role he held for over a decade. In that role, his purview included real estate, construction, facilities, security, travel administrative services, and all business systems, computing, and telecommunications infrastructure. Prior to his time at Broadcom, Ken served as Vice President of Product Management and Chief Information Officer of Rockwell Electronic Commerce. Prior to that, Ken held a number of information sciences and information technology management positions over 11 years at Lucent Technologies and AT&T Bell Laboratories. Ken received a BE from the Stevens Institute of Technology, an ME from Carnegie Mellon University, and an MBA from New Hampshire College. I recently caught up with Ken in his office in Hawthorne, California, and our conversation primarily covered World-Class IT Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as Ken discussed the methods he's used to learn SpaceX's business, especially in the early days of his tenure at SpaceX, as he was surrounded by rocket scientists and other engineers, the way he thinks about strategy in such a dynamic setting, as well as a variety of other topics. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com. You're an interesting example of someone who it had been a long time since your previous first 90 days at a job, since you were at Broadcom for more than a decade in your previous set of roles. So I'm curious, especially in light of that fact, since it wasn't as though, you know, you were only a couple of years since starting a job anew, were there some muscles that needed to be built up again? I know that you recognized excellent performance in IT from having lived that, but obviously it was a new industry, it was a new size of company, more entrepreneurial. There were a whole range of things that were very different from where you left your last experience. I realize in some ways they may have been comparable to where you began it, but can you talk a little bit about those early phases and that preparation that you took coming into such an interesting new dynamic company as SpaceX?
Yeah, so clearly it was similar to the first experience the first time around, younger, entrepreneurial, aggressively paced, more execute than plan. And so it was coming out of more risk-averse, stable environment. It was getting back. It was re-energizing those particular juices around quick decision making, quick discovery activities. And so coming in, one was, as I knew I was coming in, starting to reach out and trying to understand kind of what was the core functions, capabilities, technical decisions, budgeting, metricing that existed. So I created a series of questionnaires for the organization to try to provide, even before I got in, some insight into, you know, technology do we have, what service structure and organization do we have, what's the state of the technology, how quickly is the organization growing, what's the budgeting process, what's the total budget, kind of how much change is taking place, and just attempting to get the information early so I could get some sense of where things were at inside the company and kind of know where I might need to focus time and energy and where not. A number of forms that I just constructed off the back of my head saying, you know, coming into a new place, what are the things you want to know?
Yes.
And then sending it out and hoping I'd get some amount of feedback. And I got some. I didn't get all that I was looking for because, again, that was, for this culture, it was busy work. So it was, you know, too busy to even get the real work done, let alone get all this guy, this information he's trying to get. So a reasonable portion of it had to be stuff collected in the first 90 days when I was here. And try to understand what it was and where it stood. I mean, I'd say I got probably 35-40% of what I was asking for offline, and then the rest was just immersion in terms of meeting with the team, understanding what I've got, watching what I've got, trying to figure out what decisions were being made and kind of where it stood from there.
Do you have a predecessor in this role? Was there, or were you the first to have the CIO title?
I think I'm the first to have that title. There were two people that basically covered the scope of this role, one for the application side and one for the infrastructure side. And so then they combined both of them.
I understand. Great. And from a people perspective, how did you go about the process of evaluating your team from the outset?
Well, you know, the first and foremost, I kind of focused on meeting my peers and getting to know them and trying to understand their impressions of the organization, what was working, what wasn't. And so I'd say I spent the first 20 to 30 days, A, working through tactical issues that needed to be worked. Because there's projects in play. Clearly, the infrastructure predecessor was no longer with us, and his right-hand man also quit the second day I was here. So instantly immersed in that side of the organization and figuring out what we had, and given it's such a thin organization, lots of single point of failure opportunities where, you know, the people doing the work are the only people who know the work, and I've lost the first top two guys. So there's lots of no one knows really how this works or what it is or where it sits or who's doing what, and projects in play that those two were running that no one knows what was going on with them and where they stand and what we need to go do with them. So I'd say there was a reasonable amount of just getting your arms around projects in flight that had lost the leadership for driving them and helping to redistribute the work in the organization amongst the remaining people and attempting to recruit replacements for those people. In parallel with that, really staying focused on the, really need to understand the impression the customers have so that I'm paying attention to the right things, not necessarily kind of the organization is naturally telling you where the pain points are and what we need to go work on, but I also wanted to hear it from a customer's perspective. So I scheduled one-on-ones with all of the executives in the organization, half an hour to 45 minutes, and took copious notes, asked lots of questions, gave them, you know, a prep set of questions I was going to come in and ask, and just kind of solicited input and feedback from them associated with their impressions on both sides of the organization and what was working and what wasn't. And, you know, if they could change one thing, what would they change? And if they wanted to make sure I didn't break something that was working, what would be that one thing that, you know, was working really well and I shouldn't screw around with it? And then working my way through that whole thing to figure out kind of the company's impression of the organization, and then meeting with the individual contributors and learning who they are, where they came from, what they were motivated by, what their role was here, kind of what they're focused on getting done, how they fit in, where they saw their long-term goal. And the same questions, you know, if you could fix something, what would you fix? And if there's something in here you think is absolutely working perfectly, you would never want it broken, what is that? And taking that and then correlating executive input against individual contributor feedback and figuring out kind of architecturally where do I need to focus and what do I need to go do.
One of the logical first steps in any new experience, Ken, would be to look at the industry as a whole and maybe do a little bit of personal, the extent to which one individual can, some benchmarking and learn a bit more about the industry. What's so interesting about your experience and your company is that this is an organization that was tearing apart the industry norms, that was, you know, taking the inherited logic and inherited thinking that had been there perhaps for decades and turned it all on its head. And so I would imagine in some ways that limited the ability for you to then go off against the sort of traditional competition and say what represents best practice, because that wouldn't necessarily be so impressive or something to emulate in your new environment. So I'm wondering, was there a way in which you prepared from that perspective that at least gave you some sort of modicum of what you were getting into industry-wise without getting into the troublesome kind of avenue of pursuing the sort of old orthodoxies as opposed to playing now in this new kind of sandbox that this organization was developing?
Yeah, so I'm going to go. Clearly, I reached out to my own network and tried to talk to people who have background in the industry to understand kind of how does the Raytheons, the Boeings, United, the Lockheeds do what they do. Now, I have some background in that space because I started my first internship job at Honeywell, so I kind of had a sense of how the industry behaved, but I still spent time going, now, how do you do what you do? What do you do? How does this work? Because this is far more mechanical in what's going on than where I'd been in my prior life. I'd been far more electrical and software oriented companies than mechanical design, but still want to understand kind of how they did what they did, because there are clearly things that they do that are important to do and things to learn from what they do. It's just, we don't want to do them the way they're doing them. So learning what they perceive their best practices to be, understanding that this culture was much more risk-oriented and aggressive and saturated on change, more like a software or an electronics startup. You hear what these guys are doing, but you got to push the envelope a little to the left of what they would naturally do. And so you certainly don't want to make a stupid mistake because you just didn't know how it worked or what the issues were they were, but there was lots of things that they would say you can't do that you would just go, all right, you can't do them, but my perception is we probably can and we probably will. Learning that and then just really leveraging a little bit on the automotive side. So clearly I had the opportunity to talk to the Tesla guys and talk to some friends in the automotive industry and just understand that this was much more of a software electronics culture. So paying attention to that behavior characteristic and figuring out how to tailor the solution to that capability and not let existing dogmas strongly influence what you perceive you could or could not get done.
One of the things that's also a logical place to begin is to go through the existing strategic planning documents. And I gather from what you've said that as this is an organization viewed some aspects of planning as sort of getting in the way of execution, that those may have been lighter or in more of a nascent stage or perhaps not documented with the degree of clarity that a large, mature organization would have them. First of all, I guess I'd like to test that hypothesis. And secondly, is if that in fact the case, I wonder, you mentioned, of course, that a lot was done through those initial conversations. I assume that supplemented it. But was there much of anything that you could read through ahead of time that gave you at least some kind of insight as to what a year or two or three down the road might look like?
So I'm going to go, well, A, your hypothesis is directly correct. I think people don't spend the time to write down where they're at, and the direction can change fast enough that just the length of time it takes to write and clarify it, the directions have changed three times in the length of that document. So it's knowing the right players, it's understanding what they're doing, it's having the conversation more in real time, it's a fail fast kind of strategy where you're aggressively heading in a particular direction, but you're watching what you're doing because you understand what the final intent is as to what you're trying to accomplish. You're trying to push towards that direction and then sample where you're at if it's on course for where you want to be. So I think figuring out strategically what you want to do in this particular culture really was meeting everybody, understanding what's going on, having conversations with Gwen and Elon, and then as you're collecting the input, playing it back, and then just setting your own perception as to what it is that needed to be accomplished, and then driving your strategy for that thing and correcting it as it was either doing it or not doing it.
That would, it seems to me, suggest that you need to set up an IT department, and perhaps some of it was already set up, but set up an IT department that is well-equipped to change on a dime. And so did that mean that from a process perspective, that agility is the key metric or the key driver, and that like the infrastructure needs to be as variableized as possible, flexible enough to kind of go up and down? So I presumably perhaps some cloud computing as opposed to sort of homegrown infrastructure that the organization, develops and manages. From a people, process, and technology perspective, was the key then to set everything up such that flexibility was there to a greater extent than perhaps in the average organization?
Flexibility, creativity, a willingness to use open source or alternate solutions because the budgets aren't huge, all part of it. But because we're building ballistic missiles and we've got ITAR regulations and fundamentally the corporate culture is vertical integration and complete ownership of this solution, it's kind of not what you said. This is a very nimble and agile organization. People bounce between projects relatively quickly and projects change shape and direction relatively quickly. But no cloud sourcing. Very little flex in terms of contractor on and offboarding. No outsourcing or offshoring. Unlike the prior company where 50% of what I did was tactically outsourced, everything we do here is insourced. So the perception by insourcing was you have more control over what you're doing and therefore quicker to be able to make changes. In fact, some of the longest lead time items I've got to deal with is getting parts from suppliers or getting vendors in the network space to make necessary changes or react to outages that we're experiencing that if we had complete control over it, we would have it fixed in 20 minutes and it could take them a day. Yeah, and just in alignment with the complete corporate culture that, you know, even from a manufacturing perspective, we vertically integrate and produce most of the componentry that goes into the rocket. So you just see all feeder organizations behaving in a very similar fashion.
As you went through those early stages and developed your own sort of version of a plan, recognizing that I imagine, like the rest of the organization, that was fairly light and flexible as that was necessary. First of all, what kinds of things were in those plans? But also related to that, in this kind of an environment, how do you gauge the success of IT? What are some of those key performance indicators?
Uptime, not impacting launch or operations. So you go back to the basic block and tackle stuff of, you know, can you get it to be like air where people, it's inverse metric, right? People aren't bitching about it anymore is one of them. Strategically aligned with key initiatives that are taking place in the business, like having the right infrastructure in place to support retrieving and processing all the telemetry data or the video, enabling quick design changes in various componentry, and your ability to seamlessly enable access to features or processing capacity that enables the engineers to do their job. So it's generally all after you get past the basic, is it up, is it running, is it performing, taking up a level and going, what are people using it for and how are you supporting their use case models, either in terms of performance, in terms of time it takes to get a particular task done, number of nodes they can analyze, or access to features because you're rolling out new capabilities to them over time. You get basic metrics like emails processed, calls delivered, and then around all of that, how cost effective is it? So cost per transaction, cost per gigabyte of mail stored or number of messages processed, kinds of activities. But I tend to try to take the metrics and align them outside of the IT world, but more how the IT world is enabling the business to do what the business is accomplishing.
One common denominator among several that you've already mentioned is you're an IT leader in a tech-centric organization, just as you were in your previous life as well. What's interesting here is, and I don't know about the genesis of your time at Broadcom, but as you point out, you're the first CIO, and so you're the first sort of, well, C-level person owning internal technology, the first peer to some of the other executives in a way that perhaps the predecessors were not, since the responsibilities were divided in multiple ways. Is there a hurdle to get over, recognizing you didn't come from a scenario where you and your team were the only people who really understood technology, as so many CIOs have it, but rather, again, you were in a scenario where your peers deeply understand technology, are very engineering-centric. I wonder if there was any kind of cultural hurdles to get over as the new person controlling IT in a very tech-centric organization.
I don't perceive that there was, because the model I walked in with was transparency and collaboration versus, I'm great at this, leave me alone, I'll make all the right decisions, just trust me, which I have found as I've gotten out and talked to people, more business people, tends to be a more similar characteristic for people in our position. And I'm like, I don't understand that architectural or that behavioral model. I believe, which is why I love working in high-tech engineering companies, I believe I'm really good at what I do and I spend most of my time thinking about it, and they are really good at what they're doing and they spend 10% of their time thinking about it. And I'm just excited that they're interested in it and that they'd be willing to give me the 10 minutes to go through the design and have them agree the design makes sense, or have them point out that maybe I don't understand the requirements well enough and we iterate together. Coming in here, it was an easy adoption with the team because it came with a slightly different culture of, I embrace people questioning what we're doing and get excited that they want to learn why we're doing what we're doing and how we could do it better versus, you know, being threatened by people's interest and desire to help influence the direction the organization is taking.
As you think about the future, and certainly I imagine in those early days as you thought about the future and what the future holds, I know that a lot of IT leaders are challenged for a whole range of reasons in connecting the dots between what the company as a whole, as perhaps demonstrated in its corporate strategy or some of its key initiatives, how those then relate to the individual contributors at the most junior level. As you point out, you know, this is an organization that is, you know, rapidly changing and less able by design to have these sort of three-year plans that really reflect reality. How then do you, perhaps part of it is the fact that you're driving towards metrics that are the business's metrics, as you pointed out, but I'm wondering how you then supplement things in order to make the day-to-day activities of the individual contributor such that they can connect the dots between the trees that they're working on and the forest that the company is working toward or working on.
Okay. Well, you know, clearly the beautiful thing is we've got a very clear mission for the organization. So most of the people here sense what the larger scope and goal is and what the key milestones are, like a launch or getting stage one or stage two tested or build the first engine or create the landing legs. I mean, there's just the company itself is very good at communicating the larger, the longest range strategic goals, getting to Mars, colonizing Mars, blah, blah, blah. Some of the shorter term intermediate milestones. And then given we're almost a single location organization and the manufacturing floor is just outside, I generally take most of the team out onto the floor and point out different activities taking place on the floor, how they're important to the strategic direction for the business, and then how what they're doing enables that thing to take place. And all the way down to help desk professionals that are just lugging around machines and installing them, but they're enabling new engineers to come in, interns, new software developers, and by getting the machine there efficiently and quickly, they're empowering those people to get to work productively and soon, and therefore this particular blah, blah, blah got designed 3 days earlier than it would have, and therefore blah, 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 the flight goes on. And you just kind of build those connections between the tactical event that I've got enables a cascading flow of activity that makes this big strategic thing actually happen. Because if all this stuff, that this tactical crap doesn't take place, then in the end, the rocket doesn't launch. And just being able to correlate both engineering production and launch and mission activities and IT's tight coupling into all of those activities in terms of enabling each of those. I'm sitting here going, this is an easier company to do that in than Broadcom was. And at Broadcom, it was a building, people were working behind a machine, they were doing something, and next thing you know, this wafer comes out and this little chip comes out, and it's hard to correlate what the hell's really going on versus get up, take a walk out on the floor, see a big ass Falcon 9 sitting on the floor, and you're like, oh, all right, I kind of get what this is. I kind of figure out where we're going and what we're doing. And you can correlate when this system goes down, this machine doesn't work. And when this machine doesn't work, this particular part can't get built. And when this part can't get built, this component of the rocket assembly can't go together, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, oh, huh? So I actually have a big impact. And then you look for opportunities. Things break and how we helped fix a broken thing, or we're building a new version of something and the team's engaged. I guess my statement is, if you stay close enough to the business thing and you understand your business, it's not very difficult to look at how you're contributing to that business and how your team's individual efforts really tie into making it successful.
Can you talk a bit about some of the priorities that you and your team are involved in now?
The other interesting thing about joining the company is it was moving, and this is kind of setting strategy and direction for what we're trying to accomplish. It was moving from a build one rocket a year, launch one rocket a year, to the goal and objective is to scale the organization and produce 40 rockets a year, launch 40 plus times per year. So both from an infrastructure perspective and from a applications perspective, figuring out just what do we need to do what we're doing differently than we've done it in the past, where we were creating something no one else had ever created, to we're still going to create things that people didn't create, but now we got to repeatedly produce and operate in an environment where you're at attack time kind of pace. So moving from a R&D organization to true volume-based production manufacturing or launch. And so getting the organizations thinking through all of that, both from an applications perspective and just a pure infrastructure perspective, that, you know, you can't just lock down the launch and mission network for every launch, because it's going to be every week there's a launch. So how do you introduce change and manage an environment that has lots of change requirements on it, but you're launching every week and designing that kind of framework and infrastructure and capability has really been the infrastructure view. And the company's doubled in size since I've been here. So how do you support that doubling in growth cost effectively while still operating in a relatively high change?
Yeah, obviously you work for one of the most famous entrepreneurs around. Can you talk a bit about what it's like working with Elon Musk?
He's a genius. I mean, I never thought I'd meet someone smarter than Henry Nicholas, and I have. Driven, energetic, a huge vision, but still the ability to get right into the detail. You got to be on your toes all the time. You got to be bringing your A game to the table all the time. It's been an honor to work with him.
Obviously, he's involved in a number of companies that have some things in common with SpaceX in terms of taking industries that are longstanding and rethinking them, Tesla being a prominent example of that. And I know that our common friend, Jay Vijayan, is somebody that you collaborated with. Is there sort of a broader collaboration among IT executives in the companies that are part of Elon's portfolio for the purposes of sharing practices, understanding how best to interact with different partners or whatever the case may be? Is that still something that you do with a regular basis?
It's definitely a strategic intent, I'd say, between Jay and I. We definitely focus on too. The Solar City side has not been as tightly integrated into that set of activities because I think Solar City is a different business model than what SpaceX and Tesla are off doing. So I think Jay and I are trying to leverage the learnings of each other wherever possible. And two independent companies, but still kind of one single executive on the top and making sure wherever we can do things in a common and similar way that accomplishes the golden objective of each of the organizations doing it while at the same time being empowered to do whatever you need to do to get done what you need to get done. So don't let being common be an obstacle to getting stuff done, because getting stuff done is more important than doing things in a common way.
Is there anything as you look back on those early days with the organization that you'd do differently if you were to do it over again?
Wow, that's a great question. I'm sure the answer would be yes, but I haven't thought that one through. You know, honestly, I think I would have attempted to scale the organization faster than I've scaled it. Again, trying to be small and scrappy, because I thought that was the goals and objectives of the organization, was in some ways the right thing to do. But at the same time, given the amount of scale that we've had, having the right people in the right places at the right time would have helped a lot if I had done it earlier than where I had gotten to so far. And then continuing to stay close with the business executives. I've gotten a little focused on my work, and just as we're having this conversation, I'm like, I got to go back out and re-interview my peers to make sure what we're doing is continuing to meet the needs of the organization. Not that I sense, as you get in there isn't enough time in the day and you got to let go of something. That's something I've allowed to let go, which I know in my past has been a terrible thing to let go, because it's the one thing you got to hold on to. You got to force the unurgent, important things to stay top of mind and in presentation with those people to make sure what you're working on is really what you need to be working on.
Thank you so much for sharing your insights across this entire experience.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been a blast to be here, and I got to honestly say this is the culture I tend to. High engineering, high pace change. It's, if you think you're doing exciting things, these are the greatest places ever to work in. They're exhausting, but so enjoyable in terms of what you can get done and who you get to work with.
The Forum on World Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat believes in the value of a connected ecosystem to inspire innovation for tomorrow. To learn more, visit redhat.com. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.